Yeah. Check. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped but it's no hype. From this height it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flare, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd. No, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in, and welcome to the show. It's Monday, December 8th, and I'm joined here with a special guest tonight. Joined by Ali Salam. How are you doing tonight, man?
How's it going? Peace, guys.
Thanks for coming on short notice and joining the show. There was some stuff that we were talking about for the last few days that I wanted to see if you maybe wanted to shed some light on tonight after we got into a little bit of this news that we're going to be covering, because there is a lot of stuff going on all over the place with whether it's us getting a one step closer into war with Russia because Congress is finally acting in a bipartisan manner. I mean, it's kind of telling when you see Congress act, you know, so divided at certain times and then so bipartisan at other times. And I'm pretty sure you know what I'm talking about with all this. Basically, propaganda, this march towards escalating the situation between Russia and Ukraine, which is like one of the central pieces to this whole puzzle, and then Syria. I mean, it's like we just keep on making things worse and worse and pushing Russia closer and closer edge, you know, and pushing them closer in with China, too.
Yeah, like, so when it comes to, like, the real issues, they're lockstep. There is no divide, even beyond war, when it comes to like Monsanto or maintaining the Federal Reserve System, the IRS, tax codes, all this, or like, you know, let's say there's a set of lobby groups get a certain amount of Democrats, or a different amount of lobby groups get a certain amount of Republicans, even if they're both corporate, you know, not like corporate versus union or whatever, or any of this other kind of stuff. It just depends which money buys out which politicians, regardless of party. You know, the two-party system is really the one-party system, but war is where they especially are the most bipartisan. And when it comes to the Ukraine, it's obvious that, you know, like CIA covert ops and everything like that were going in, creating this rebellion against the guy who used to be in there. And basically, you know, install this guy, and all of a sudden you have all these IMF loans coming in. Joe Biden's son is on the oil like company's board of directors. I mean, it's so clearly obvious all about, you know, it's kind of like the Confessions of an Economic Hitman. It's just another one of those instances of taking over a country to get their resources, price it in the dollar, and then kind of create this proxy war against Russia via your puppet in the Ukrainian government, which they have all these kinds of dangerous right-wing fascist ideas about them. They're backed up by an even bigger right-wing fascist government, the United States, and they're really kind of going after Russia. And I'm in no way kind of defending Russia or anything like that. It's but it's like you gotta realize when it comes to like imperialism and the New World Order, the people who have to defend their countries from this overreach of the United States Empire they go behind the strong man. They don't go behind the best man that's going to like respect their liberties and everything like that. They're going to go against the person that's not going to cave in. So you're going to get Assad, who's not that good of a person. You're going to get Iran, which, you know, they're nothing compared to this empire. They don't invade countries, and you know, they're very, you know, it's very, you know, all the media manipulation of what we think about Iran is obviously not true, but they're obviously no government is ideal in this world. But they have to pick the strong man to go up against the empires. And so, the United States can pick all these little character flaws and like, you know, some of the bad things that these guys do, but you never look and see what the United States is doing and how they're beyond hypocritical, because obviously it's, you know, the banking system controlling both sides. Maybe not, I don't know how much, probably not in Iran or Syria, because they don't have the central bank there yet. But when it comes to like, you know, United States versus, you know, some of these other countries, it's definitely all, you know, controlled. And
I think you're exactly right, man. This whole vote that basically took us a step closer to a war with Russia, it's basically condemning a lot of the stuff that NATO has been accusing Russia of doing in Ukraine. You know, they're basically saying that Russia helped take down that plane, the Malaysian airplane or whatever. But like you were saying, how these parties really go into this bipartisan fashion when it comes to starting up wars. I mean, you're not going to believe this. There was only 10 members of Congress that voted against what do they call it? Some kind of escalation, man.
Yeah.
It's not really a bill, but it's basically an indictment, more or less, at the congressional level. And they're basically indicting Russia over what's going on in Ukraine. But the funny thing, I guess it really isn't very funny, but the horrible thing about it, about this whole thing, is that, everything they're saying, it's so Orwellian, because it's everything they're accusing Russia of doing, it's basically the exact same thing that the U.S. has been doing.
Yeah, we're saying, doing on a much larger scale.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and they're saying that, oh, well, Russia violated their sovereignty, and they're not respecting their borders, and they're destabilizing the region. I mean, these are all things that the U.S. is like so, you know, known for doing. It's almost like they're like purposely trying to troll people or something. I don't know what they're trying to do, but this whole report is Orwellian, and only 10 members of Congress voted against it, man. And I mean, the guys that voted against it are the same guys you would think. They're all those Ron Paul, you know, following congressmen that are left. There's like 10 of them left. And yeah, those are the guys that voted against it. But I mean, this is just crazy. These guys are getting us closer and closer into this World War III situation. And there's like hardly any debate even going on about it. It's crazy.
Well, we're kind of already there by proxy. And like you said, it's like, well, let's look at the United States track record. Native Americans and you know, African slaves. Okay, that's maybe not going beyond your borders. It kind of is, because, you know, that was Native American land and Mexico wasn't theirs. But let's say, you know, once the, you know, mainland United States was established, at the really great track by Low Key called Abomination, the first one, you know, the intro is, you know, this is not an attack upon the American people. This is an attack upon the system within which they live. Since 1945, the United States has attempted to overthrow more than 50 foreign governments In the process, the U.S. has caused the end of life for several million people and condemned many millions more to a life of agony and despair. So millions, because they don't like with the, and this is the way media works so well to brainwash people. People's misery is dependent upon people being brainwashed here, because everyone's brainwashed, bombs fall over there. As a, like we think that Americans are all oh so special for whatever reason. I don't know, whatever. Therefore, you know, everyone else lives outside of our borders, not human. So the word millions doesn't even faze people. But if like, you know, one, you know, like I think Family Guy made fun of it. It's like, you know, like one, you know, little white girl dies. And I, you know, I'm not trying to play, you know, that, you know, but there is, you know, obviously racism within the media. And this stems all the way back from, you know, slavery and everything like that. But, you know, there's just a, it's the very much the disparity within the media coverage, as opposed to, you know, every life counts. Whether it doesn't matter where you live in this world, you know, we should be concerned about when anyone dies. That's a tragedy. But we put, you know, we scale people's lives comparatively. Some people are inferior, some people are superior. So all the people that the U.S. has killed, oh, who cares? But Russia, oh, they're the big ugly bear, and we gotta get those military contractor bucks in. So ramp up the media brainwashing, and all of a sudden, you know, a couple of people's lives matter versus the let's take a million lives in Iraq just from the sanctions under Clinton, which Madeleine Albright was like, you know, that's the price we have to pay, a million dead Iraqis plus a million plus dead Iraqis from the actual war in Iraq under President Bush, let alone depleted uranium, where there are more miscarriages than deliveries. As far as, you know, pregnant women are concerned in Fallujah, from all the depleted uranium, and that's going to last for decades. So if you look at the U.S.'s crimes, it makes Russia pale in comparison. And obviously they're not the best, you know, they've done a few things here and there, but not anywhere close to what this empire has done. And it's beyond shameful. It's criminal. And, you know, these people are going to find judgment one way or another about it. Hopefully we have, you know, war crimes sometime in our lives, trials. But it's just the hypocrisy is just disgusting. And then if you take, you know, how the Federal Reserve funded Hitler, funded Stalin, you know, created Israel. So if you, and Mao, you know, Mao Zedong, David Rockefeller said that Mao's, you know, great experiment in China was a beautiful test in social democracy when 80 million people of his own people died. And that was obviously, you know, funded a lot by, you know, the banking elite. Same with Stalin, same with Hitler, same with, you know, the Zionist regime or Bahrain or Saudi Arabia or all the colonization of Africa and South Africa and all this, you know, that, and that's all the onus is on the American, you know, kind of banking establishment that's behind the Federal Reserve. So forget about just the, you know, the overt cost of life that the U.S. military is directly responsible, like in those millions. You add in all those, like, at, like tens of millions. I think, you know, Russia is, like, pale in comparison to what, you know, the crimes that the United States is responsible for. And they have the nerve to put this bill into law. It's just so it's scary because it's drifting us closer to this, you know, global conflict that we don't want to see happen.
Yeah, man. And I'm looking at this. I'm looking at this article that we actually covered this whole bill on the anti-media. And I'm looking at it here. And basically, it was a bill to start arming the new Ukrainian Western-backed regime. But the funny thing is that the resolution that goes along with it, where they basically are condemning the fact that they claim that Russia is meddling in the internal affairs and supplying arms. So now they're going to start supplying arms. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, we're accusing you guys of doing these bad things. So now we're going to go ahead and start doing some other bad things. Now, I think we're joined on the call now by DB Schwartz, and we also have a caller on the line. How's it going, DB?
Doing pretty good, Nick. Just fighting off a cold and trying to move at the same time, so I apologize. I'm a little under the weather.
Oh, no worries, man. Well, good luck with the getting over your cold and with the move, man. That sucks that both of those things are happening at the same time. We do have a caller in from 406 area code. I'd like to give you a chance to either ask Ali or one of us a question or just talk about whatever you want to talk about. Okay, 406 just dropped anyway. Okay, never mind.
Oh, I wanted to add, Well, we kind of know the infamous picture of John McCain with, like, the Syrian rebels. I think similarly with Ukraine, if you look at, like, the make of the weapons, or the, at least the tear gas some of the protesters use, and, you know, it's kind of like, I mean, yeah, they may have had legitimate reasons to be, you know, kind of like there before the U.S. got involved, there was a legitimate grassroots, you know, movement among Syrian people to, you know, reform their government when it comes to Assad, because, you know, he wasn't doing so many great things. But then the U.S. kind of tries to, you know, opportunize that so they can turn that into, okay, now we're going to overthrow Assad for the petrodollar and the Rothschild Bank, you know. So they kind of like take these genuine movements and then make it all about, you know, spreading, you know, the dollar hegemony in the region. And the same thing, like if you look at maybe some of the tear gas canisters or maybe some of the, you know, makeshift, like, you know, weapons that the protesters were using, a lot of it comes from the U.S. and U.S. weapons manufacturers. And a lot of that, you know, probably like, you know, some CIA covert ops and creating this artificial rebellion in order to install. Now you have, you know, the IMF loans and the Joe Biden son thing that on the oil, you know, company board of directors there in Ukraine that we were talking about earlier. So it's just very interesting that they say Russia's arming these people when the United States is doing the exact same thing, but they can deny it because of the CIA.
Yeah, man, it's just so much covert operations, and this whole thing is like a total NATO operation, you know, and they're trying to bring Ukraine into the fold of the West so that they can cut off the oil supplies into Europe and then fill the void with their own oil coming up through Syria, which is the same reason why they've been having this beef with Assad for the past couple years. And this goes back. This goes back years because Qatar and Saudi Arabia has been at odds with Assad for a long time. And like you said, there was definitely an organic uprising in Syria during the Arab Spring. But the U.S., as always, what we always try to do, we go in and co-opt a lot of these revolutions, start arming the wrong people, place our own puppets within the government, like we did in Ukraine. And then we try to turn these places into just Western puppet states that to allow our corporations to go in and just, you know, basically more or less rape the people of that country and the resources. And it's like a recurring theme, and that's why it's so important for us living in the United States, considering that it is our government that is the largest oppressor around the world, and the people that come in second place. I mean, I guess you could say Russia. They, like you said, they pale in comparison. It's nothing. It's like hardly anything what they do, and almost everything they do is with like right along their own borders. They're not all over the world like we are. But it's important for us as Americans to the world to try to rein in all of this stuff, because if we don't, you know, our like you said, our apathy means death and destruction for people in Syria, death and destruction for people in Palestine, just for us just not speaking out about it. But fortunately, it's starting, I don't know, but it's starting to look like people are ready to break this cycle, man. People are really getting out in the streets now. And I haven't seen anything this big since the Occupy days. You know, and it seems like there's definitely a resurging movement that's starting to rise up. And one of these stories I wanted to talk about, I don't know if it's connected, but there was this huge fire last night in L.A., 1 million square foot apartment building burned. In downtown LA. Did you guys hear about that? I saw some pictures, and it was just like a huge fireball over the downtown LA area. It was crazy, man. It looks huge.
This is the first time I heard about it.
Yeah, and you know, the thing that I'm wondering is, like, and there's been some speculation online, is that there's a possibility that this building was burnt down out of protest. And it was a huge,
I've also heard they had a battalion of Marines moving in there, which is, you know, over 1,000 men. So they're kind of expecting maybe the Berkeley thing to spill over. I always notice that it's kind of a pattern. Whatever gets going in Oakland eventually gets going in South Central area. And it's just, it looks like it may be something where they want to contain it before anything even gets going. Because once LA gets going, well, then we know it gets going everywhere.
Yeah, I saw that. They're planning a huge training operation, and that's always scary stuff for the conspiracy theorists out there, because it always seems like there's whenever there's a training exercise, something bad happens.
Yeah.
You know, that, yeah, that's what's going on in L.A. They're doing this huge Marine exercise, and they're kind of keeping it mum as far as what it's all about. But, man, it's kind of scary stuff. But I did see a article out of one of these military online publications. I forget which one it was, militarynews.com or something like that, about how the morale is fading big time in the military, man. And I think the article, it showed all the polling numbers, but then the article kind of tried to rationalize why these polling numbers existed. And I think they were off on that section because they said, oh, the reason morale is low is because they're not sending us into enough wars. I mean, this is what these guys were saying on this military news website. But I think actually the opposite is true. I think the morale is low because they keep sending us into these wars that have no real meaning. You know, they send us into a bunch of these banker wars, Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Ukraine, what they're trying to get us into now. I mean, that's why the morale is low. They know that they're not fighting a legitimate enemy. I mean, who wants to go bully on a third world country with no military? I mean, that's not really that honorable. You know what I mean? So I think guys in the military, like, they sign up to, like, actually defend this country from external threats. But instead, they realize that these politicians are sending them in on these missions that really have no real endpoint or no real goal, you know. And so I think this is why the morale is starting to fade. But also, I've seen that it's been harder for the police to recruit people because of social media getting so getting so prevalent with this, you know, police accountability movement.
Or maybe because people have too high of IQs.
I mean, that could be part of it. And then there was a recent story not too long ago about how the FBI wanted to start hiring stoners or people that smoke marijuana because they were having trouble recruiting hackers and stuff that weren't, you know, using cannabis. So I think there is just looking at these crazy poll numbers coming out of this military outlet, I mean, there are reasons to be kind of optimistic.
Yeah.
Hey, Alex, are you typing right now? I think you need to mute up.
Oh, yeah, my bad.
I can hear you typing. No worries, man. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely changing. But what do you guys think about this huge fire, man? I really think that it's definitely, I mean, they've said that they're going to be investigating it as a criminal act. You know, they're not saying it was an accident now. There's been varying accounts about it, but it could be some environmentalist activists, some anti-gentrification activists. I don't know. Or maybe it was
What's the significance of the building?
I'm not sure. It was just enormous. It was like a million square feet apartment building.
I think first and foremost, you're going to have to look at, is this another insurance fraud type of issue? You know, what's the whole situation with the building before you start trying to blame it on environmental activists? Because more than likely, it's going to be something really, you know, asinine like that. And then they're going to use it as a reason to come down hard on a community because, oh, no, all these arsons are going on. We're about to see some kind of civil unrest.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, man, is that's how it's being played. You know, there's already chatter going on about it being blamed on someone like that.
Maybe like a way for like law enforcement to say like jump to a conclusion before they could actually prove it was as a way to like, we got to be on the lookout for this and that when, you know.
Yeah, man. And then we got this other story out of Wisconsin, and this one is also featured on the anti-media. But apparently this city has decided that they're going to ask their citizens to voluntarily submit to allowing their homes to be searched to see if they have any guns that they may have not known that they had or that they forgot about or something like that. I mean, it's crazy how they're rationalizing this. But in an effort to get people, quote, get people thinking differently about guns, Police Chief Norm Jacobs of the Belia Police Department is asking locals to grant the police department access to their homes so they may search for firearms. I mean, this is crazy. This is just like a total, total overreach. And like you guys were saying, it's part of this, you know, demonization process. And that's what the police chief actually said. He's like, He actually says right here, I want people to think of guns like they think of Ebola. Even though guns aren't a bad thing. Guns are, it's a good thing to be having guns around. I mean, it's only bad if you use them for bad reasons. Just like anything else, I mean, if you have too much sugar and you use too much of it, that's dangerous to your health as well. You know, so, I mean, this is crazy, though. This is a total demonization of innate object, more or less.
Well, imagine what they'll look for all contraband. So, I mean, you better really make sure you get a good house cleaning before you submit to something like that.
Wait, so it's a voluntary? Your people are voluntarily letting this happen?
That's what they're saying, yeah.
Well, that's the first step. Then it's going to be mandatory.
Yeah. And I saw this commenter, and one of the guys that was commenting was like, well, if you're dumb enough to call the cops and allow them to do that at your house, then you're probably too dumb to own a gun anyway, which I thought was pretty hilarious.
Or have other
cops. Yeah, man. And then they, of course, just like at a DUI checkpoint, like, you know, 70-80% of the people that they give tickets or citations to at DUI checkpoints aren't even for DUIs. So, I mean, you got these cops digging through your house. I mean, who knows what they're going to be looking for. I mean, this
what
is
are they
going to
do? Go through it with a black light? I mean, look, they can do whatever they want when you give them, you know.
Yeah, it's like vampires.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like a vampire rule.
I mean, and to me, I guess this is kind of like conditioning in a way, but it's really dumb, I think, because they couldn't have chosen a worse time for the cops to come do something this dumb. Because especially now where there's such a public outcry against the police and distrust with the police, I don't think it's ever been higher. Now is a bad time to be talking about going and searching for people's guns and stuff. I mean, come on, dude. People are buying guns by the truckloads right now because people are starting to understand, starting to feel that, hey, something's off here. Something isn't right. Why are these police so damn militarized? They must be, you know, preparing for something. I think people are thinking that, and that's why they're stocking up on guns and all this stuff so much, because, you know, people are out in the streets by the, you know, thousands now every day, it seems like. I mean, half the news on the corporate media right now is about police, and it's really vibrating really hard right now. This whole subject of the police state and the militarization and the racism within the police. I think that it could be what we're seeing is the beginnings of the next big social movement. I don't know. It seems like it's been coming on for a few years now, but it seems like it's kicking into high gear. I can't remember a time since the Occupy movement that there was big protests every single day. You know, and right. This has been going on for a few months, a month or longer now, you know.
Well, I guess it comes down to if people are willing to accept the middle class to continue to shrink. I mean, how low do we go? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man. I mean, if you look at these protests now that are going on up in Berkeley, and obviously this stuff all kicked off during the Mike Brown grand jury and the initial killing of Mike Brown, because the people in Ferguson were done with it. They've had enough. And I, in one way, man, I you have to think, in Ferguson, the cops are going to think twice next time before they go and shoot somebody. So in a way, they've already made progress in that, in that, you know, respect, even though it took a lot of things like smashing buildings and burning stuff down. The cops are really going to think twice before they shoot somebody again in Ferguson. Because they just don't want that public backlash. But if we look now to Berkeley, it's moved from just being about the police, which it definitely still is, but, I mean, these guys started targeting, they smashed up a Chase Bank, they smashed up a Wells Fargo, they busted up a bunch of ATM machines. I mean, these guys are, like, starting to strike out at the banking system. And then I don't know if you guys saw any of these pictures that were coming out on Twitter, but man, they had hundreds of cops starting once they started realizing these guys were beating up on these banks. They got hundreds of cops to go and surround these banks and not let anybody get to them. And Ali can kind of vouch for me on this, because you and me were both at a protest here in San Diego during the End the Fed rallies when we were out in front of those banks, and we witnessed the same thing. The cops were standing on the bank property holding us out they weren't standing on the public property, you know, making sure our rights were protected.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very telling when you see cops standing and protecting banks.
Yeah. And we were just doing chalk and, you know, free speech and everything like that, which was ruled to be okay. And I mean, like, I don't necessarily advocate for, you know, violence of any kind. Like, I think we should move towards a system change, because if we just smash things, you know, they're still there. And, you know, if they could print a bunch of money to pay for a new window. But if they're going to destroy anything, I don't advocate for anything, but if then rather it be, you know, banks and, you know, kind of larger corporations and not just, you know, random, especially, you know, smaller, you know, businesses. Although, of course, life is obviously way more valuable than property. It cannot, you know, life cannot be replaced. But, you know, banks and cop cars are definitely, you know, much more focused, you know, as both ideologically and then just willy-nilly just breaking anything. So, but obviously I don't advocate for that. You know, obviously system change, jail the bankers, you know, do away with a dollar system, increase our natural resources, hemp and everything like that, organic food, do away with Monsanto and these non-biodiverse farms that just corn destroying the soil, break it up, you know, break up the ownership, you know, break up, you know, more biodiversity, everything like that. Because what's money or currency, what any kind of currency without, you know, a natural resource to back it up? And that's how we really have prosperity at the end of this. But that's kind of like a more bigger picture thing. But I do think that, you know, we should have, you know, animosity towards the banking system. But I do believe we should be channeling it in towards more positive ways of undoing their system, so then they don't profit off of it and they go to jail and we can be freer to prosper and build the natural resources that will back up whatever alternative currencies we choose to go with.
Yeah, man. And speaking about natural resources, we got this 2015 NDAA that's coming up to vote. It was supposed to go up today. I don't know. I don't think it did, but it'll probably get voted on tomorrow or sometime this week.
But when nobody's paying attention.
Yeah, exactly. And this is something we're going to start talking about in the coming day. We have an article ready to go on it, but we're just waiting for a little more information. But within this NDAA, there is a provision that basically grants 2,400 acres of Apache Native American land to the in the Tonto National Forest to Rio Tinto, an Australian English company. So basically, the new NDAA is going to jack a bunch of land from Native Americans, and they're basically going to give it to some guys to drill it for the natural resources. Which is horrible, man. I mean, this is stuff that isn't right. And of course, we can't forget the NDAA is notorious. Ever since, what was it, 2013, when they added that provision that basically allowed people to be indefinitely detained, without trial and without due process and all that stuff, you know. And so, this NDAA is a huge bill too. It's like worth billions and billions of dollars. It's crazy. Crazy.
And it's completely legal under the pretense of national security, because now if we go to war with Russia, we need our own independent energy supplies, a.k.a. oil, and we're going to frack the hell out of ourselves.
Yeah. Well, I was actually watching like how fracking is like kind of like a short burst. Like you get a bunch, but then it eventually runs out. It's like a very short-term thing. It destroys the environment, and then it eventually ends up costing more once, you know, the benefit runs out. And yeah, then the price of fuel skyrocket. So actually, I mean, that's kind of like a sans all this, you know, kind of like, you know, going to war with Russia, and we get cut off as far as energy goes. You know, forgetting all of that, you know, the fact that fracking is so impractical, you know, financially, and the fact that, you know, it could run out of, you know, value. That's a little bit of a good thing, because that means there'll be just, you know, less fracking, and then thus less uranium in our freaking drinking water, with all those billions of, you know, gallons of wastewater that Jerry Brown let go into our groundwater and everything like that. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, man. obviously the answer isn't with the fossil fuels, right? We need to move into more energy that is actually renewable, and look at how much energy the sun puts off. The sun puts off, you know, we get enough sunlight on the earth to make enough electricity for like 50 times the population.
Well, you know, when I was campaigning for mayor of Encinitas, I had a, you know, platform point about Nikola Tesla and free energy and using the 10th Amendment to nullify the patents for that. So I think anybody who's listening should try to, you know, check out the movie Thrive for free on YouTube. Definitely, if we do that, then everything, you know, you pull the rug right under out of the empire's feet, and then it actually makes life pretty good for a lot of people.
Yeah, man, and we talked about this a little earlier. About how these Berkeley protests are really starting to take on a new face. And I think it all combines in, now that these guys are, and like you said, we don't condone violence or anything like that. They're smashing up banks and stuff. Okay, fine. You know what I mean? But it kind of all rolls into the fact that people aren't just mad about police brutality. They're mad about a lot of other things too. And rightfully so, because especially the youth, man, the millennials and the people younger than that have been really left out of all of the stuff that's happened, the bailouts, the school system, the economy, the jobs, the debt and all that stuff. I mean, we've been completely thrown under the bus. So, yeah, that's why there's a bunch of young people out there in the streets. They're all races, they're all colors, they're all creeds. I mean, there's just a bunch of young people out there that are mad about police brutality and racism, but they're also mad about a lot of other stuff because there's so many other horrible things that are going on. And I think that these protests carry on, they're starting to definitely take on that bigger face. I know here in San Diego, I mean, we've united our marches many times with the protesters marching for the Mexican 43 and the students that disappeared in Mexico. And, you know, they're combining and they're building up these bigger movements. I have Manny on the line here out of L.A. I think he's still on the line. How's it going, Manny? What do you want to talk about tonight? You have any updates for us on Mexico or anything in L.A.? What's going on?
Definitely some updates. Happy birthday again. What's up, Alex, BB, and all that. Down here, we're kind of looking at the fires. I was kind of thinking, brand new building that they were building, something was up. So, you know, something definitely happened, you know, that shouldn't have happened. But it's okay that it happened if it happened, you know, whatever, you know, and stuff. I made a post about Berkeley. I'm calling Berkeley the Mexico of the United States. Now, they're kicking that up a notch. That's what I'm talking about. You know what I mean? They're not going after our houses. They're not going after our, you know, our neighborhoods in our own stores. They're going after the banking system, and I can understand why the banking system, because of the foreclosures and blah, 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 and stuff like that. Well, we've already kicked it up a notch in Mexico, obviously. Not only did we close down our hometown, my hometown, I should say, of Acapulco Airport, now they closed down the Oaxaca International Airport. So that's two airports, you know, and so to zero, you know, and I'm saying to zero because I'm waiting for the United States, you know, I'm waiting for DV and, you know, Nick Barnaby to maybe go close to San Diego Airport, and then you guys can tell me about it so I can meet you up there, okay?
Yeah, man, I mean, just imagine the effect that you can have by shutting down all the airports in a country. You can bring the whole thing to a standstill, and that would really send a message and shake things up.
Oh, definitely. Actually, we're already scared, you know, the government in Mexico, because his family is now in Miami. And now, not only did the family come, they brought the entourage, you know, the cooks and, you know, and I've talked to other sources that are under the, you know, the radar, but they're reporting that, you know, they took their cooks and all these people, and I'm like, wait a minute, if you need a visa, you got to wait 30, you know, days to even be considered for a visa, but yet you brought all these people on board. And this is what my concern is, that to me, how can you get priority? I don't care if they're the president and stuff like that. They're doing bad things and all that. So basically, Mexico's saying that tyrants can come in, that terrorists can't come in. You know what I mean? That doesn't make any damn sense to me. This president has terrorized our country, and yet his family is now in Miami. Now, as far as I'm concerned, they can have a terrorist within the family. You know, how do we know the family is not up to something while they're here in the United States also and stuff like that?
Well, yeah, man, so a terrorist, you know, a terrorist might kill one or two people, three, four, five people or whatever. But, you know, when you kill people on a mass scale, I mean, look at it, the president of Mexico is probably responsible for, I don't know, 20,000 deaths or whatever. So when you do that, that's just considered, you know, domestic policy. You know, and a tyrant like that, like you said, they don't they treat terrorism with this crazy they're crazy strict at the TSA with terrorism, while at the same time they allow the president of Mexico's family to begin evacuating Mexico and start coming to the U.S.
They it's crazy. They let Netanyahu into the country.
Exactly, but the protests are getting heavier. You know, Tijuana's heavy, Mexicali's heavy. Now I've been asking my people that I know up in Tecate that we got to start something up there at the Tecate border also and stuff like that. So if that happens, I'll definitely give you an update on that, okay?
Cool, man. Yeah, man. If we wanted to know if Mexico is coming close to a revolution, I think we've been talking about that for a while now, and they definitely are. But if you wanted to sign that it is coming close, then you look and you see that they're starting to evacuate some of their people. In case of a revolution, they don't want the family to get him, you know, caught up and tried at trial, or you know, thrown in prison, or worse. You know, who knows? The mob could take over, and they could be executed. Who knows? But you know, I mean, if we're starting to see that kind of move, then you know, Mexico is getting really close, man, to some kind of revolutionary act. And there was a story just last week about these women that are taking up arms down there as well in Guerrero, I believe it was. And so people are all getting involved, and that's why they are so afraid of these students and these protesters, because they're so heavily organized, so well organized and so passionate, man, because you got to remember, these are people that have been oppressed since the days of Spanish colonialism, and it's never stopped. And so they're very tired, and with the new tools that we have, with the internet and stuff like that, I mean, you know, and we've talked about it before, they've already got some working models down there with those self-defense autonomous groups that are throwing out government and cartels from the land and taking the land back and doing it as a community. So they've already got a lot of working models in Mexico to work with, and so if they did something like that there, I think it would have a lot more success in the short term than we would in the U.S., because the people in the U.S. we really have no clue what in the hell it is that we actually want to do. Everybody knows, yeah, something's wrong and something's off, and it shouldn't be like this. But at the same time, nobody really has any really good solutions. A lot of people do, and a lot of people, you know, a lot of people think they have solutions. But the problem is that we have a problem getting widespread support for any individual idea. There's so many different ideas out there that a revolution in the U.S. would probably end pretty disastrously, because we wouldn't have a plan to implement once we got through it. You know, and that's something that we need to work on. People, we need to work on these ideas that are feasible to use in the community. If we want to get rid of the police, then let's start figuring out a way of community policing and stuff like that, and start building these kind of institutions that aren't government, outside of the government and like run by the community. We need to practice, you know, we need to try these ideas out, fine tune them, get them working correctly. Because if we're just sitting around talking a bunch of shit about the government and saying, yeah, the government sucks and all that stuff, while at the same time not really doing much to get ready to move, not have to worry about that stuff anymore, then we're not really adding to the debate. We're just sitting on the sidelines yelling at the players, more or less. You know, if we really want to change it, man, we got to get inside of the game and change the, you know, build institutions that are more justice based and that aren't oppressive like the crap that we have now, because it, basically the cops have become corporate enforcers. You know, like that Ray Lewis, that former police captain of Philadelphia, was saying. I mean, a lot of these cops have just turned into corporate enforcers, and that's what they do now. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're not really peace officers anymore, or anything like that. You know, so we need to build better organizations that aren't going to be subject to that same kind of bureaucracy and that those same kind of flaws that we see with this governmental civil services like the DMV and like Social Security and all that stuff that is run horribly. And most of it's has a bloated budget, or like Social Security is in a huge debt. All of these things need to be done away with and replaced by new ideas that people are yet to really come up with. Maybe the ideas are out there, they're just not widespread yet. But we need to have these ideas working if we're ever going to want to stop talking about how crappy the government is and start actually doing something about it.
For sure. It's definitely like beyond the kind of like corporate state, like both with corporations and the state. It's like, you know, for example, you know, just like getting together and planting food, and then therefore you have a bunch of natural resources that can back up, you know, a currency outside the oppressive debt-based central banking system. That also, anywhere it's set up, they also have an income tax, because when you have the debt, how do you pay the debt back? Through an income tax. That's why the IRS and the Federal Reserve were set up in the same year. But you add hemp to the mix with industrial, you know, hemp and cannabis medicine, like, you know, people's cancer, epilepsy, and diabetes being cured by the Rick Simpson oil. That's like a real solution, because, you know, what do you need money for at the end of the day for anyways, but food and medicine? And, you know, therefore, you know, money can be used for more kind of like higher echelon type, you know, human activities, like, you know, buildings or like planes and stuff that requires like real labor. And therefore we're all set as far as, because we're growing a bunch of food, biodiversity, you know, even the money that you use is not connected to, you know, any of this kind of like Rothschild makeup of the way the banks are set up. It's definitely like a recipe for prosperity and abundance. And it's decentralized and you know, with like the whole thing about Earthship homes and like, you know, walk up, you know, and then you have a banana tree hanging out in your living room, you know, with aquaponics throughout your whole house, and you pick a banana. It's just all these types of things are definitely like out in the rise. But the problem is that government controls so much of our natural resources. All these, like, entire, like, if you just drive across the main freeway in Nebraska, it's all corn. That's all you're going to see, and probably a lot of it's genetically engineered. And all that pollen's floating everywhere, you know, corrupting your ecosystem. But if you, you know, get rid of the subsidies, these companies are going to be left out to dry, because they're not going to have so much, you know, their overhead decreased by, you know, just taxpayer money going straight into their pockets. They might lose some of their land. That might... And if we have the right people in office, instead of selling that right to back to another corporation, how about reconstitute it for the people and let us produce our own value on it? Like, not sell, like, there's like, you know, the conundrum between privatization and owned by the state. How about neither? How about the state doesn't own it, but they don't sell it to a corporation? They just reconstitute it for the people at no cost, and we just plant the seeds, you know, do away with all the toxicity of all the Roundup, which is basically watered down Agent Orange. You know, all the Monsanto destruction of our environment, detoxify. Hemp is a great tool for that. And then, you know, have, you know, actual biodiversity, and then we'll have a lot, and the price of organic food will come down because there's a lot more supply now. It's not so scarce as it used to be. And, you know, hemp, of course, and you know, just the hemp alone is like the multi-layered, you know, just from the growing to the harvesting to the turning into raw materials to the turning into products to the marketing of the products, like the hemp cars, the hemp, you know, everything is ridiculous. I mean, that's why they keep it illegal, because it's meant to, you know, this system kind of thrives off of scarcity and the ability to, like, you know, that you need the piece of, you know, the dollar bill with the, you know, the strange symbols on the back in order to eat at the end of the day, which is just the most ridiculous thing. So, you know, we could do away with that whole thing, and just, like, if we have more community gardens, people would be sharing with each other. So I think if we start even moving towards experimenting with that, just like growing our own food, you know, I'm a vegetarian myself, but if people want to, you know, raise their own animals, use cannabis medicine on their animals.
Yeah.
I think we won't be towards, you know, towards maybe new forms of policing, but even in just that area alone, you know, kind of more sustainable forms of agriculture that will, even that will open up the floodgates towards all this other things for new forms of policing, you know, control, you know, how to regulate the airwaves so that, you know, your station signal doesn't, like, I mean, that was the original purpose of the FCC, but now they went beyond that. Now they're actually controlling the content of those airwaves. So it'll be interesting. You get one bit of freedom and it shines and it creates, you know, freedom everywhere. So people should, you know, be experimenting and moving that direction.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's so easy to see the problem, right? We see that the cops are horribly corrupt and violent.
Yeah.
And we know that. And that's the easy part because we can see those guys. We see cops every day when we're driving down the street, walking down the street, whatever. Many of us are harassed by cops pretty often. So we're able to see that. That's something that you can – it's actually tangible, you know. But we got to keep in mind that the cops are really just the face of this whole machine, this whole corporate government machine that has grown into more or less a police state. A very close to a fascist police state, and it kind of sucks because now at this point we've gotten to a point now where the Constitution is actually like kind of holding us down in a way because these politicians get to ignore it whenever the hell they want, but at the same time we're binded by it, you know, and it's very limited. It's been interpreted in a way that's very limited, and the legal norm of the modern day, man, it's really given the government basically, you know, complete leeway in interpreting the Constitution. But when it comes to us, it's like everything working against us, locking all of our people in jails and racking us up with these crazy student debt inflation and healthcare costs and forcing us into Obamacare and stuff.
And it's created an elite justice system because if you have the money, you're getting off, and that's for sure now.
Yeah, man.
I mean,
exactly.
we can look at the judge that just got off of a very, very, very blatant DWI. I mean, she probably could have killed somebody quite easily, and she's not going to go to jail. And I mean, it's insane.
Yeah, man, and all of this stuff is just part of this big mechanism, which is all connected back to the Federal Reserve, you know, and this is where it all really stems back to. But then, you know, those are the problems, but then the solutions are kind of more complicated because it involves, as Ali was saying, the Fed is backstopped by the income tax. So if you wanted to end the Fed, I mean, it would be as simple as ending the income tax, and if not ending it, then doing a tax strike and not paying it. You know, getting people to not pay their income tax would undermine the entire Fed. It would undermine the petrodollar and the whole system. But if there was a big tax strike in this country, believe me, they would lock a lot of the people up. They'd lock up thousands and thousands of people for doing it. Because right now they're locking them up for victimless crimes for people smoking weed in some states. So they would do it for taxes for sure because that really undermines their system. Prison industrial complex, that's just like a little added bonus on top of what the Fed is already doing. You know, that's just a little more profit making for their buddies in these private prison corporations and stuff like that. But that's, you know, that's the true nature of the system, and every dollar that we spend in that system, it just adds to it because every dollar gets taxed. And if it's not taxed directly, like let's say even if you're just going to the swap meet or going to a garage sale and buying something from someone right there with cash, and you're thinking you're not paying any taxes, well, unfortunately, you are, because there's always that dollar tax. They're always creating the dollars. So the inflation erodes out your money. Right now we're in a situation where there's like a really strong dollar, but you have to understand that's because we're stepping up to bat. In Ukraine and Syria, so the allies are, oh, these guys are really going to start World War III just to protect the petrodollar? Okay, I guess we got a little more faith in it. You know, so this whole thing with this strong dollar, it's not a good sign, actually. It's actually kind of scary because these guys are putting their chips where they think they're going to fall, man.
Right.
I don't think this is a good situation. This tells me that we're, you know, serious about this stuff with Russia and this confrontation with Russia, you know, and we got to keep in mind, like Ali was saying earlier too, it's all to keep up this petrodollar system, and it's all about keeping the pipelines cut off in Ukraine and keep, and building up their new pipelines coming from the Arabian Peninsula.
Yeah, there's two countries now in Latin America that are not trading on with the dollar. They want Latin America wants to create their own currency, just like Europe did with the euro and stuff like that. And so I'm kind of glad that boycotting the way they're boycotting the dollar and stuff like that, you know. So that's why I like to see all these good things happen, you know, like those tractors that were marching down there at our protest. I really enjoy seeing that city council mark, you know, right there blocking traffic in New York because of the Eric case and stuff like that. So I think a lot of good changes are happening and stuff like that, you know. Even the anti-media saw a good change today. As a matter of fact, I want to make a comment about it, that it's really nice. You know, I like your cover. I like the nice logo that you guys put out there, stuff like that. And then I saw the guy with the gas mask. I figured that's probably BB Shorts, you know, the gas mask, and they're ready to go to war. So I kind of, really nice cover.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Yeah, we changed the cover up for the, now that we're going 5 days a week. And yeah, make sure everyone listening and I make sure you guys check us out 5 days a week now, same time, same station. You can just bookmark this, website that you're on right now and you can listen on your phone too. If you're driving.
Friday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Yep.
Damn. I didn't know that.
So we got Alberto on the line now, 737. How's it going, man? What do you want to talk about?
Nothing much. I just, for starters, hola Manuel and salam alaikum Ali. And
alaikum assalam.
And assalaikum assalam to you. Anyway, pretty much, I don't know much about Arabic. I only know the hello and, oh, one moment. I only know my...
Okay, I don't know what's going on with Alberto over there, man.
Go ahead. Anyways, I just wish that you could look up a little bit of finance because, I don't know, they pretty much it's starting to look suspicious why the Russians are buying gold, that the Chinese are buying gold, and that apparently that it's rumored that Bitcoin might crater again. And Mexico is slowly and steady, the peso starting to devalue, and also the government approved new taxes for the overall population. Plus, I just found out that the Mexican bank is trying to auction off their emergency dollars that they have in their funds.
Yeah, man, I think Mexico definitely is getting close to what you would call a powder keg, and it's been brewing for a long time. They've been getting screwed for so long, and they haven't had a revolution in over 100 years, 115 years, so or 105 years. So, I think it may be time, and hopefully this time it works out better, and you know, more people are better off. You know, that's all we can hope for.
Yeah, but pretty much when during the panic, chaos, and confusion, people will not know what to do. Pretty much, there's no emergency plan.
Yeah, well, a lot of that is gonna have to happen spontaneously, I guess.
I suppose that's the hope. Hopefully, at least we'll be a little bit ready, per se, or at least have the basics idea. Anyways, you can look me up on Twitter, Facebook. You know my cyber name, 314 Love Machine. That's pretty much all I want to cover because Manny already did it already. Hola, adios a todos.
Cool, bye, man. Everybody. Now we also got this call from Anonymous for a huge march on December 13th about this whole police brutality issue. NYC is the flagship event, but they're trying to get it going in every city all around the country. December 13th, they're calling for this thing. So look for that in your area. We'll talk about it more as it gets closer. Thanks for tuning in. Catch you guys tomorrow, 5 days a week.
Peace.
I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.